All right. A few more Nats calls. What do you think of the firings yesterday? Mike Rizzo gone. Davey Martinez gone. DeBartolo is going to take over as the interim GM. He had been on the staff working for Mike Rizzo for a while now. Apparently more data-driven, Mike DeBartolo is. Smart, thoughtful, the learner said in their statement. We're fortunate to have him as part of our organization. Remember, the Nats have the number one overall pick in the MLB draft a week from now. So the timing doesn't seem great, but they moved on from Mike Rizzo now anyway, and the manager replacement, at least an interim manager replacement, will be named sometime today. The Nats not back in action until tomorrow night in St. Louis. So, what did you think of the firings? Are you okay with it? Are you disgusted by it? And who do you blame for all of this? It's been a rough 6 years since, you know, the eight-year run of five playoff seasons of, you know, for during that eight-year run, all eight seasons above 500, even in the 3 years they didn't get to the postseason. They were 86 and 76, 83 and 79, 82 and 80. I mean, attendance, you know, over 2.5 million for almost all of those years, and culminating in that incredible, memorable October of 2019. But since then, one of the worst teams in baseball with, by the way, you know, an attendance mark that just looks paltry compared to what it was when they were competing for play in October. So who do you blame for all of this? What's your reaction to it? 301-230-0980. We had Mark Zuckerman on the show last hour. He was excellent. And Chelsea Janes will join us at 11:30. I am going to get to some of the other things that happened over the weekend, including the Wizards trade for Cam Whitmore. I can't believe how many of you believe that that trade is going to put Washington into the postseason next year. But we will talk about that a little bit later on in the show. Ben will join us at noon. Let's go to Ian. Ian, go ahead.
Kevin, we endured 25 years of Dan Snyder, so we all understand that when you have bad ownership or irrelevant ownership or criminally negligent ownership, no one can succeed. We've seen that. So the blame starts with the learners. I don't care what
criminally negligent is hyperbole at your best. You know, no, so Kevin, but the Kevin, other the other descriptions are not, you know, inaccurate. Go ahead.
So let me flush that last statement out. They were the only team without a stadium rights naming deal and a logo deal. They have one of the higher cost of attendance figures in the majors. They have one of the worst payrolls since 2020. And this notion that the pandemic hurt them, yes, of course, real estate development in the DMV was hurt by the pandemic, but they are still one of the richest ownership groups. And they're not the only ownership groups that have real estate involvement in the MLB. I think the way they treated this franchise is criminally negligent. The greed of them is awful. With that all being said, Rizzo is bad and Davey is bad. There is a whole lot of losing on their resume to just blame the learners. And this notion of Rizzo saying, oh, I had to deal with this ownership group, it's what I say about Mike Shanahan, going back to your guy. Can't work for an ownership group knowing their shortcomings and deal with it. Take their salary, and then when it goes south, say, oh, it's their ownership group's fault. He had plenty of opportunities to find different employment. If he thought the learners would go back,
he was sought after there for a brief period of time.
Then he should have left. You can't, Kevin, if you blame your boss at 980 for poor working conditions after you get fired, they would say, why didn't you leave earlier? Like,
well, there are lots of reasons why you wouldn't leave earlier. There are lots of reasons why I would stay here. You know, one of the things I know about Mike, because we got to know him a little bit over the last several years, is he loved this area. Absolutely loved D.C. So there's a lot that goes into these decisions. It's all not just about your employer. It's about your quality of life. So there's a lot that goes into that.
You understand, Kevin, you understand this better than most. For him to make it seem like he was a hostage working for the Learners is kind of ridiculous.
That's not exactly what the statement said. It could have been a lot more critical than, hold on, let me just pull up the quote here. Could have been a lot more of a shot taken than the sun will come up tomorrow. That's the job. I had a great run, navigated that ownership group for almost 20 years. That's closer to a subtle shot than a direct shot. It's indirect more than direct.
Okay, we can.
I don't know. It's close.
The nuances of that. Yeah, we can debate what? The nuances of that. But the point being that, again, I think they're all bad. The blame pie is obviously ownership one, Rizzo two, Martinez three, and they're all bad. I just hope that this ownership group sells, because I don't see any way that they all of a sudden start trying at an MLB level that's commensurate with our media market size, our potential fan base size. And I, of course, would rather take Leonsis than the Learners, but I don't want him either. Like,
me neither.
This town not
I don't want him owning three teams in this. Yeah.
Yeah. God, like, this is one of the richest areas in the country. What, third most high per capita? Isn't there a billionaire in Potomac that can, like, buy this team? My goodness. Like, you should do a segment in August when it's dead of, did we have the worst ownership run of any major city ever?
It's got to be up there. It's got to be up there. The saving grace is that the Caps were, and for the most part, they have been, a postseason team every year. And regardless of you saying, you know, that Rizzo's horrible, he hasn't always been horrible. They had an incredible eight-year run. They won more games during an eight-year run, 12-12, 2012 to 2019, than any team in baseball not named the LA Dodgers. They went to the postseason five times, didn't have a losing record, and won the World Series. So, and by the way, I would also mention during that stretch, Ian, and I think even you will appreciate this, they created memories that this town didn't have of this sport. I mean, the meltdown in the 9-7 game five loss in the first year of 2012 to St. Louis, the losses at home, the pain, but the memory, the indelible memories that were built up during that stretch that culminated with a satisfying beyond description World Series win. I give Mike a lot of credit for that during that period. I do. Let me move on. Aveen, go ahead.
Hi, Kevin. I'm indifferent to what the firings mean for the future of the Nationals. As you've talked about, Learners have developed a reputation of being cheap and difficult to work with. And if you just look at like a Commander's equivalent, having the reputation of being cheap and difficult to work with means you're not going to be able to attract, you know, an Adam Peters, Brandon Sosna, Lance Newmark, Dave Gardy. You're just not going to be able to attract that talent to the front office. And it wasn't just being cheap with the payroll. It was being cheap with the front office. I think there was a story a couple of years ago that they cut a bunch of scouts and they really never made up for it.
Yeah.
And then they were also the last team to purchase Hawkeye pitch tracking technology, which is something that like every team uses a lot. So it's things like that, the investment in the front office. So I just wonder and think like, how much of it was Davey and Rizzo being hamstrung? Because, you know, when they were investing a lot in 2010, they were winning his team. And last time Martinez got significant investment and they had a bigger payroll, he won a World Series. So I'm never going to know how much blame to assign them. I think they were in a bit of an unfair situation. And just with regards to future ownership, You know, your interview with Ted Leonsis kind of swayed me that it might not be so bad with Ted. I mean, he made it a point to point out that he knows that investing a lot of money in the team means a lot, and that you need to be investing somewhere near top 10 in payroll. So that kind of sold me that he realizes baseball is a sport where you got to spend money. So if somebody like Leonsis came, I would be excited and on board. And I think if the learners are here, it's not that attractive of a destination, but if they leave, it is a really attractive destination because of the market and the young talent they have.
Thanks for the call, Levine. Yeah, I mean, I have mixed feelings on Ted owning three out of the four professional sports teams when, you know, of the two he has now, one's been a disaster basically during his entire tenure. Not that it wasn't prior to him taking over the Wizards. And the Caps have been a successful franchise and they did win a cup. But it was courtesy of, you know, being there in the right draft at the top of that draft to draft Alex Ovechkin. And there's a lot of people that would say they fell short far too often than, you know, that they didn't get enough out of it. Even Ted, in my conversation with him, said, you know, without that 2019 and maybe without, you know, winning a playoff series, which they did this year, which was good for them, you know, there's still going to be some criticism that they didn't get enough out of the Alex Ovechkin era. I don't think, you know, Stan Kroenke owns, I think he doesn't own three in any market. I think in Denver, if you include the soccer team, he owns three. But I don't know if that's the best situation for a sports market to have one owner, you know, essentially be picking between three franchises. You got to be really well funded. The David Rubenstein, Ted Leonsis combination would have been very interesting to me. Very interesting. But Rubenstein now owns the Orioles. Let's go to JYD. JYD, go ahead.
How you doing, Kevin?
What's up?
The main thing is that I blame, yes, the owners or whatever. And I think the situation came like it is now yesterday is because I don't think they were looking for another Jim Riegelman type situation where, you
maybe
know, there was chaos.
Yeah, by
whatever,
not picking up their options.
They went on to pull the string.
Yeah.
Now, as far as you also have to blame the players, because time and time again, I sat here looking at my big screen TV and I saw how badly this team ran the bases. Time and time again, these young guys, they do not seem to get it. They don't seem to put, it's either that or they don't put enough time into it, or maybe it was the coaching. But somehow there was a disconnect, because for a couple of years since they brought up these young guys, they gave away games after games because they didn't pick up the signals, the signs, that the whatever, when to steal, when not to steal, or whatever. And they gave up runs. And so that, I have to blame the players. And all this stuff about, you know, when you talk about you love your coaches and you love your manager and all this or whatever, look out. Because if you really loved your manager, if you really loved your coaches or whatever, then you would put forth a better effort.
Yeah. Thanks.
Thank you, Kevin.
Really appreciate it, JYD. Let's go to Lou in D.C. Lou, go ahead.
Kevin, man, what's going on, man? How you
hey,
doing?
Lou, what's happening?
Not much, man. You know, I'm like JYD. I'm blaming the ownership, man. Just the simple fact that they keep having these players, you know, we like the Juan Soto, the Bryce Harper, you know, these guys. You have them, you have the opportunity to sign them, but you let the other teams, you know, grab him and sign him, and you let him get away. And I can't blame Davey. He's working with what he got. Mike Rizzo, he's been phenomenal since he's been here. He know how to sign players and draft players and things like that, develop all these players. So, you know, the learners being cheap, you know, they remind me of the hockey team, but, you know, Ted Leonsis, he owned the basketball and the hockey team. So he's just another a mediocre owners, man. They just don't know how to run their business, man. It's sad. I mean, the Commanders should be the blueprint right now for this town, how to run their business and your team.
Yeah. They are.
I just don't get it. Like, I don't know how you could just, you know, Ted Leonsis is, like I keep saying, he just loves being in the playoff. He doesn't care about winning the Stanley Cup. He like collecting those checks in the first, second round, and that's it.
Well, the checks would be higher if they kept advancing. I don't think that's it. I think there was a period of time with the basketball team that just getting to the postseason, you know, with barely above a 500 record meant a better chance at sort of profitability, or certainly increasing the profitability situation, because the NBA is completely different, as you know, Lou, than the NHL. The NHL, getting into the postseason every year, you got a shot. Everybody's got a shot, you know, once you get in. The NBA thing, I think they stuck too long with let's try to get a playoff series and maybe even win one without really ever having a chance to go deep into the postseason or win a title. That's the biggest issue. The Wizards ownership situation for Ted is completely different than the NHL ownership situation. It's interesting, right? Because I think over the years, Wizards fans think Ted's a terrible owner, and for a period of time, Caps fans were okay with Ted as an owner. I'm not so sure in recent years. But anyway, thanks for the call, Lou. Everybody on hold, stay. We'll take one more segment of some calls, then Chelsea Janes will join us just past 11:30. Kevin Sheehan Show, the Team 980, theteam980.com. If you want to stream the show, you can also watch us on our YouTube station, the Team 980 YouTube station. Like the 980 YouTube channel and subscribe to it when you get there. From the Washington Post will join us at 11:35. We'll continue the conversation on Mike Rizzo and Davey Martinez being fired yesterday by Nats ownership. Mike DiBartolo will take over as the interim GM. A manager will be named today. The Nats do have an open day. They have the day off. They travel to St. Louis today to face the Cardinals in the first of a three-game set tomorrow night. Let's go to Vic in Clarksburg. Reaction to the firings of Mike Rizzo and Davey Martinez. Go ahead.
Thanks for putting me on. My opinion about everything that's happened is, prior to 2019, with how we drafted Harper, Strasburg, Turner coming up, the farm system was loaded. We developed players where the need was with pitching, where Corbin and some of the other free agents that were signed, Scherzer being the big one.
Yep.
That credit goes to Rizzo. Now, post 2019, we've been in the bottom half in the league in terms of farm system development. Without Juan Soto, before that trade, we were in the bottom half. Before that trade, we jumped to the top 10. The only thing that Rizzo can get credit for post-2019 is that Soto trade. But I really think he didn't do a good job of developing the farm system, bringing in players, developing the players needed to make this team successful. And now a little bit of the blame goes to the Lerners, not signing any good arms for this season and the seasons in the past since 2019. But it really is the farm system development. Rizzo gets a majority of the blame. He got the credit for the World Series, among the others, but post-2019, he didn't do a good job.
Thanks for the call. Yeah, everybody has certainly weighed in on the drafting and the lack of developing the farm system, which was the feeder there for that incredible 8-year run, and, you know, Steven Strasburg and Bryce Harper, and then, as you said, what they were able to do with, you know, some free agents to supplement that, especially pitching-wise with Max Scherzer, to get them into, you know, that contention phase that they were in for, you know, a long stretch. You know, again, I mean, I don't know that everybody remembers this, but they won more games over an 8-year period than any team in the bigs except for the Dodgers. Let's go to our guy Lap. Lap, go ahead.
Hey, what's up, Kevin? Thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
Well, you know me, man. I'm not a big baseball guy. You know, I didn't even want the team when they came here, but of course, I'm DC born, raised, so I root for all my DC teams. I told you a while back we needed to enjoy that World Series because it was monumental. You know, I do commend the last regime that was there for that, but we just meant bad, man. I mean, this team looked worse than the Wizards and the Commanders was at one point. And so I don't know. And I agree with you with Ted being the owner, you know, maybe we need to go in a totally different direction. Only thing about it is we're familiar with Ted. We know how Ted operates. It probably wouldn't be as bad, but I think we should be open into getting some new ownership in, and I think things will change. But it's just,
well, we can only be open to new ownership if they actually decide to sell the team and for a price that the purchaser deems to be fair, which is the issue that no one wanted to pay what the Lerners would have sold for. There was certainly a Ted Leonsis interest, maybe a Ted Leonsis David Rubenstein combo that was interested, but they didn't think what the Lerners were asking for. It was worth it. So I don't know where the Lerners are now. I would imagine if somebody came up with their number, they might decide to move on from it. But until that happens, you know, they're probably not going to sell. They've operated their businesses very much on, you know, standalone businesses. You know, it doesn't matter what their overall wealth is. What is the business that they own doing from a P&L standpoint? Is it, you know, is it supporting itself? Are they able to, you know, turn a profit? And, you know, cost cutting is a big part of how they've made some of their businesses work as well. And every single dollar is counted. And we've seen that over the years. But when in position they did, and you know, you never know how much Ted Lerner while he was alive had something to do with that, you know, the desire to see a competitive team in a World Series back in Washington for the first time since the mid-1920s. You know, it was almost 100 years in between. So when he passed away, maybe, you know, the desire, and remember, there are a lot of people involved. It's not just Mark Lerner. There are several people involved. Tommy's talked about this, and there are divisions within that group. So we'll see. It's not the best situation, that is for sure. The one thing we know, no matter how much you want to be critical of Mike Rizzo, of Davey Martinez in recent years, the one thing we know is that the ownership situation here, we've known this for a long time, is not top tier. It is about the business and making money, and in some cases, not losing too much money, you know, as much as it is about winning. They are not, you know, that's not the way the business has been operated, certainly in recent years. All right, we're gonna get to Chelsea Jange. She is standing by. Chelsea has watched all of this unfold for many, many years. She'll join us next.
All right, the Clippers, Jazz, and Heat have agreed to a trade that sends Norm Powell to Miami, John Collins to L.A., Kevin Love and Kyle Anderson in a 2027 Clippers second-round pick to the Utah Jazz, per Shams Charania. And the Nats, they were swept by the Red Sox yesterday, leading to the firing of Mike Rizzo and Davey Martinez by the Lerner family. A new manager will be announced today. Mike DiBartolo will take over as interim GM. Some positive news on the front for the Nats, Mackenzie Gore and James Wood were both named to the All-Star team this weekend for the first time in their careers. And the U.S. men's national team falls to Mexico in the Gold Cup final by a score of 2-1. Edson Alvarez with the header to put Mexico in the lead and lifts them to their 10th Gold Cup victory. This update is sponsored by the Team 980 YouTube page. Just open the app, type in the Team 980, hit subscribe. Kevin Sheehan is live from 10 to 1 and Craig Hoffman from 4 to 7. Don't forget to like the stream and turn on notifications to stay up to date on all things DC sports. And that is what's trending.
And if you have ebbs and flows during the season, and I think that you've seen that. What has to stay constant is, you know, your starting pitching has to be consistent. Your defense has to be consistent. You can't give away outs. You can't give away extra outs. You can't run into outs. And I think that that's how you win those, you know, 2-1 run games that we didn't win in June. And these young players have to get better at the fundamental side of playing the game.
That was Mike Rizzo last month on with the Junkies. Remember, that was during the 11-game losing skid, and a day or two after Davey Martinez was asked about the offensive struggles, and he said it was on the players. Davey Martinez is gone, and so is his boss, Mike Rizzo. By the way, this from Keith on Twitter. Does Josh Harris have room in his ownership group to purchase the Nats and hire a legitimate front office to run the show? I would say that after needing 25 limited partners less than 2 years ago to come up with $6 billion, add another $100 million into the current stadium and a projected expense, we'll see if the city council gets it done, of $2.7 billion for a new stadium, I think they got their hands full, Keith. That's just me, but I doubt they're looking for another team purchase in another sport. Joining us right now, one of my favorites, Chelsea Janes, at Chelsea_Janes on X on Twitter. She, of course, covered the Nats through that 2019 World Series title, then got involved, if I recall, in the 2020 election and covering that. But she's now the national baseball reporter for the Washington Post. By the way, am I right? Remember, wasn't it right after they won the World Series, you shifted to the 2020 election?
It was right before, so.
It was right before.
Getting me off the beat was fortuitous, apparently. But yeah, that's exactly right. I went there and then I came back to the world that's more fun for sure.
Yes, a lot less angst-ridden. All right, so let me just get your overall thoughts on what happened yesterday.
You know, I was stunned. Maybe people in our position shouldn't be stunned by news like this. You know, I think a lot of people in the organization were also stunned, but not stunned because I, you know, thought Mike Rizzo and Dave Martinez had locked up their jobs for the foreseeable future, but stunned because the learners don't do things like this. This was swift. It was decisive. It was surprising. And I think it also might have, you know, ultimately been, you know, the right thing to do, which is also why it is stunning.
Okay. Swift, decisive, rather than what? Indifferent and sort of disconnected, exactly. Which is what some people said that made it surprising. Is that part of why you were surprised? Because you thought, in essence, I mean, this is an exaggeration, that they were barely paying attention?
Yeah, absolutely. You know, I think, you know, I and others and people in the organization wondered at times, you know, what would have to happen to make a big change. You know, it never seemed like, you know, it seemed like if it were on field performance that would have come already. But, you know, their timing is what it is. I'm just surprised that they are plugged in. I don't know what pushed them over the edge, but, you know, for them to actually have made a decision like this qualifies as really surprising at this time.
All right, so why do you think it might be the right thing?
You know, I obviously have a lot of respect for both Davey and Rizzo, you know, as people. I think it was clear that there needed to be a different voice sort of day-to-day in the clubhouse. Just, you know, this team wasn't progressing. I mean, James Wood is one of the best players in baseball, and the team didn't get better, you know, when he became an everyday superstar. You know, Mackenzie Gore is you know, making a lot of progress, striking out a ton of people. Scherzer and Strasburg numbers, and the team is not getting better, and the fundamentals are still not there. The attention to detail wasn't there. It just seemed like there was an urgency, and, you know, that may or may not have been Davey's fault, but often when that is the case, you know, changing, you know, in the manager's office makes sense. It's justifiable. I think on Rizzo, you know, I think if we're kind of being honest, there wasn't going to be a major change in the direction of the organization if he were still in charge. Does that mean they wouldn't have gotten back to winning, especially if, you know, the owners were willing to pay for it? No, they very well might have, but they weren't going to do it soon, and they weren't going to do it in a way that kept up with, you know, the ways that teams are being successful these days. So, you know, I think if the Nats want to refresh, they had to do this. Now, they also have to hire people who are not from, you know, be inside and have new vision, and, you know, they're gonna have to pay for that. So, you know, we're only halfway to a refresh,
right?
But I do think that they needed it, and, you know, this is step one.
You know, we'll get to whether or not they can attract somebody then, and they'll pay somebody, but in many ways, do you think that they were just looking for, were they aware enough to understand that they were, for the lack of a better description, underfunded, but looking to see and hopefully witness an overachieving team, which they haven't had necessarily in recent years? Is that what they wanted out of the last couple of years? You know, essentially more out of less?
I definitely think they hoped for more out of less. I don't know what they expected this year. You know, I think not a lot of their decisions, particularly when it comes to freeing up payroll for the front office to work with, suggested that they felt any kind of urgency about winning. So I don't know that they cared. I don't know that they cared about winning. I know, though, that they do care about how they are perceived. And I think maybe it kind of hit them that, you know, what they are seeing this year is not moving in any particular direction. And whether they're willing to spend or not, you know, it had to start moving in a certain direction. You know, everything had kind of stalled out. Attendance is not great. You know, people are not happy. And I do think that matters to them. So, but ultimately, it could be as simple as, you know, they looked up, they realized they weren't making progress. They realized people were frustrated. And Davey and Rizzo's options were up in a few weeks, and they said, we're not going to pick them up, so we've got to make this choice now. But I think getting to kind of the bottom of the logic here will be really fascinating, because it's really out of character for this ownership group.
You just said something that's interesting. You said they do care how they are perceived, and maybe that's part of why this swift, decisive, out-of-character response was... you know, their action yesterday. The next part of how they're perceived is they're perceived as, you know, operating in a way that's more equivalent to a mid-market, if not a smaller market team. Will they change that part of their perceived personality?
I don't see it, but I didn't see this either. You know, I think from what we've heard, you know, ever since the pandemic, you know, the money has been tighter. And right. I'm willing to believe that. And I think, you know, if they do this right, that's survivable. You know, we know teams can be smart on a budget. I don't think they're going to be, you know, I think they're willing to kind of get that payroll up a little bit. I don't think we're going to see them be, you know, A's level or anything. But, you know, I just think that at this point, I have no evidence that they're willing to splurge the way they used to. And I don't think they have the resources to do it. They certainly, you know, have suggested that that is not in the cards. That does not mean that they can't commit to a winner. And I will be interested if they have internally sort of recognized that maybe, you know, if the money is not where it used to be, we can do this in a very different way. We can put a lot of money into player development, you know, play the Rays, the Guardians game, the Brewers game, you know. Should that happen in a market as big as DC? I mean, that's a separate question, but it can happen. Then again, you know, and I know you know this too, like, they have not always been the kind of people who go out and spend their time searching for the absolute best and brightest. So, you know, operating on a budget and doing it successfully and winning would require a really thorough search with some kind of out-of-the-box thinking that hasn't been characteristic of how they've run things. So I don't know, you know, where they go from here. I don't know how much, you know, the way they're perceived matters when it comes to money. It certainly hasn't moved them in the past. But I do think there's a world in which a new reality and winning can coincide. And to their credit, I don't think it was going to happen with Mike Rizzo in charge.
The swift and decisive response, do you think it was impulsive from this standpoint? Are they actually prepared right now to... you know, they've got an interim GM, but are they prepared to name a manager today? Did they have a plan or not?
I don't know. You know, I don't know. I will say that the interim GM, Mike DiBartolo, has a lot of allies in the organization and could very well be the right person to lead them forward. You know, if you hear that and think, well, he was a part of this group and they didn't do a good job, so why would he be right now? I think I would say that Mike Rizzo isn't always the most open to his deputies and probably in many cases overruled them. So, you know, we never got a real sense of what the guys kind of below him could do. And there's some really smart people there. But I don't know beyond that. You know, I think I don't know if Mike DiBartolo, you know, runs a successful few months and has a good trade deadline and, you know, a consensus approved draft, if they just say, here, take the reins, you know, I don't know. that seems to be sort of the way they would prefer to do things. It's less expensive than running a search and paying someone a big name. You know, it's easier. But, you know, that's where we don't know what the vision is. I will say if they ended up deciding Mike DiBartolo was the guy, I think, you know, that wouldn't be the end of the world. But as for a plan beyond that, I hesitate to think they've sat in the room and laid it all out. I think often they are much more decision to decision, try to get everyone to agree. And when you get a consensus, do that thing and then move on to the next thing.
Talking to Chelsea Janes, of course, from the Washington Post. You know, when you describe the reasons why you think it might be the right thing, I think they're all reasonable. And I think most reasonable people can understand that this is a situation that was more than just ownership. But I'm curious as to whether or not you think, A, pandemic, B, you know, the state of will they sell or won't they sell, C, Ted Lerner passing away, which was, what, 2 or 3 years ago now. If these three things, well, if the pandemic doesn't happen, are they ever looking to sell the team? How much of these three things and maybe another thing or two have impacted why they are where they are, which is going to be a sixth straight hideous season?
Yeah, there's no doubt that they ran into a brick wall. I mean, I think winning the World Series the year before the pandemic, I don't think you can over-exaggerate how devastating that was financially.
Right.
The year after is the year where you really reap the benefits. Everyone always says this, and they didn't get to do it. And had they done that, does the signings change? Does Soto stay? Do they trade Trey and Max? I don't know. I do think they were getting to a point where there were a lot of big contracts, and even a great revenue year probably wouldn't have allowed you to keep all of them. You'd probably have to rethink at some point. But it definitely didn't help. And I think Ted Lerner passing away really threw them into a place of indecisiveness. That they have to make decisions as a group. Mark Lerner is not the kind of guy who's going to go in there and pound on the table and say, I want my way. You know, when it comes to the baseball decisions, he's got to get everyone on board. It's just kind of a perfect storm of stagnation, I think, when the pandemic happened. They didn't have money. They didn't have the patriarch there. And, you know, they had people in place in Mike Rizzo and Dave Martinez who knew the organization really well and had ways of doing things and weren't going to change, you know, to adjust to a new reality. They were going to just kind of wait a few years, you know, rebuild the talent pool and hope that worked. And it just hasn't yet. So, yeah, I think part of the reason this is so surprising is because there's a lot going on here. You know, you really can't point to one of these two guys and say, if, you know, we replace Mike Rizzo, everything's going to be better because the ownership's going to be the same. If you fire Dave Martinez, the clubhouse is going to be better because the names in there that Mike Rizzo put there is still the same. So it's just, there's a lot going on. This doesn't fix everything, but it does clean a slate that probably needed to be cleaned if they were going to make meaningful change moving forward, and they still might not, because I do think, you know, that ownership group has not proven that they are capable of doing that yet.
Right. I want to get to that in a moment, but let's talk about in the short term. There's a draft. There's a trade deadline at the end of this month. What do you expect? Do you expect that they had the draft figured out before they fired Rizzo yesterday, or do you think DiBartolo will have a big voice in what they do?
I don't know, because I don't know how different DiBartolo and his approach will be than Riz's would have been. I do think that, as you know, a very important pick in the history of the franchise, which I believe this is, you know, this was going to be a Mike Rizzo pick, and Mike Rizzo picks, you know, from what we know, are usually pitchers. If he has his way, they're usually big guys. They usually come out of college and, you know, he wants to be able to get him there quickly. You know, I think that's his ideal pick. So a guy like Kate Anderson or some of these college guys made a lot of sense. I don't think that necessarily changes, you know, with this change. But I do think that where Riz might have banged the table and overruled, I think DiBartolo will really listen to the people who've been out on, you know, putting in the miles, analyzing these guys. I think he will really just listen to the people in the room. I don't know. Again, I don't know if that's different. it leads to a different outcome, but that is sort of my expectation, that he's going to make the decision with a little more analytics involved, with a little more input from the guys that are hired to do that. And, you know, I don't know if he'll try to make a splash. That's not, you know, what I know him to be, but I don't think he'll be afraid to make the pick that he feels and that group feels is the right one.
I was just reading this from Ken Rosenthal. He said, the fallout from all of this is coming soon, first with the draft, then at the deadline. If ownership allows perhaps to Bartolo, maybe he takes an aggressive approach, entertaining offers on players, the boldest of which would be to listen on Mackenzie Gore, who is at the same level of service Soto was when the Nats traded him in 2022. I haven't thought about Mackenzie Gore as a potential big trade piece before the deadline on July 31st. Have you?
I have not seriously. I will say Mike DiBartolo was a big advocate of trading Soto when they did, so I would imagine it has crossed his mind. That being said, I don't... That might just be too much to take for everyone right now. And yeah. I do think ownership cares about that, that, you know, but they need some pieces. So it's not crazy, but DiBartolo will do what makes sense numerically. I don't think it'll be a surprising trade deadline. I don't know if he'll have the mandate to be as bold as to trade Mackenzie Gore. That's something else we don't really know, is, you know, if he's truly being handed the reins here, or if they'd rather, you know, if they're really looking ahead to bring someone else in, if they'd rather that person make that decision. You know, I think that's possible too. But I would say, again, I err on the side of the learners have fewer plans than more. So, you know, if they have kind of gotten to this point, you know, I think a Gore trade would require a lot of ownership consideration. And I just don't see how they've gotten there yet. Doesn't mean it won't happen. Doesn't mean it's not the right move. But, you know, I think they will sell at the deadline in a fairly reasonable way. And if a Gore trade comes on the table, then I think we'll know how much they trust Mike DiBartolo.
All right, let's finish up with what comes next, sort of the big picture. Is it attractive, the job with the learners as owners, the GM job? Let's start there first.
You know, one of 30. You know, I think there's 30 jobs, and you can never underestimate how desperate people are for them. That being said, everyone knows how the learners operate. Everybody understands how they operate with the manager, too. So I think anyone taking that job will be, you know, brought in with eyes wide open. But I do think it's still attractive. But, you know, again, like, they also have to pay. So I don't know how willing they are to pay a big name. But if a big name is willing to come, you know, I don't think they'd be surprised by how the learners operate. Everyone.
Who are the big names that you would think would be available at the end of this season?
You know, Barry floated a few. Like, Thad Levine is an Alexandria guy. Josh Burns is a D.C. guy. You know, I think Jed Hoyer with the Cubs has his contract up. A guy like John Daniels, who used to run the Rangers, has kind of been sitting around for a while. Those are the kind of guys you could bring in and make a president of baseball ops right away, and they could hire a GM under them and really kind of give you direction.
So more of a Stan Kasten model.
That, I mean, that's what I'd do, but that costs money.
Yep.
And yeah.
What about managers?
That's going to be a really interesting question. I don't think we'll get a ton of clarity on that until we have more clarity on who, you know, the GM is going to be long-term. I think for now, you know, Miguel Cairo will probably be the guy, and if not, Matt Lecroy will probably be there. It just makes too much sense. But I've been wrong before. And then in the long-term, you know, a guy like Skip Schumacher is still available. You know, he's kind of being an assistant for the Rangers right now. He's kind of the number one prospect out there that people really like. Guys of that ilk, you could get creative and pull from the Dodgers staff. They've got this bench coach, Danny Lehman, who's kind of the mind behind them, never played, but is a real data guy. So there's options out there. But again, you have to have someone in place, I think, to make the personnel decisions. And that person will tell you probably where you're going to be looking.
Thanks for doing this. I always appreciate it. You're great. Hope all is well. Talk to you soon.
Yeah, thanks for having me.
Chelsea Janes, everybody, from the Washington Post. All right, we'll switch topics. Ben Standing next. We saw the report over the weekend that Terry McLaurin is still far apart on negotiations with the team. Football talk next.